on this episode of The Kinked Wire.
So there was a big shift from the government perspective about professional societies needing to write and look at evidence in a way that the public could trust.
Welcome to The Kinked Wire, the interventional radiology podcast from SIR Publications. You can learn more at our website, sirbob.org/kinkedwire. In this episode, host Barbara Nichol-Hamilton speaks with SIR President-elect Alda Tan about her efforts and standards and guidelines, her vision as incoming SIR president, and more.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks again for the invitation, Barbara.
Could you tell us a little about yourself? Where did you complete your training, and what are some of your interests, whether they be clinical or non-clinical?
Sure. I'm actually a Canadian. I was born and raised in Vancouver, and I did my medical school at the University of British Columbia and then residency at USC, where I trained with Vicky Marks and Sue Hanks and Mike Katz and Don Harrell. And then after that, I headed down to MD Anderson Cancer Center, where I completed my fellowship, and I've been on staff there ever since. In terms of my clinical interests, I'm pretty much a full-time interventional oncologist. I started out doing liver interventions, but have since morphed into really taking care of patients with bone and lung metastasis at this point. In terms of non-clinical interests, I love to travel and I really like to read.
So where was a recent trip, or what's at the top of your list of travel destinations?
Probably the last non-work trip was right before the pandemic, when my family and I went to the Azores and Portugal, and that was an amazing trip. We've tried to take the grandparents on these multi-generational journeys, either for spring break or summer, and we've been to a lot of different places, including a lot of the national parks, which were amazing, as well as Iceland.
I might have to get some advice from you on these multi-generational trips, because I'm just embarking on that myself with my five-year-old. So how did you first get involved in SIR?
Well, SIR, I think everybody knows, is the premier society for interventional radiology in America. And as a resident and fellow, I became aware of it and its purpose and how it exists and offers multiple programs to help IRs throughout the stages in their careers across various aspects. And really, it was one of my mentors, Marshall Hicks, who was really involved with the society at the time, who was like, hey, maybe you want to try volunteering. And that kind of started the ball rolling. I was also the beneficiary of the SIR Leadership Academy very early on, and that allowed me to network and get to know other people with similar interests. And I think that's been super rewarding, to be able to form relationships with people interested in IR who are outside of, you know, my regular practice.
Yeah, I would echo that and just completely plug the Leadership Academy here. I also had the opportunity to take part in that a couple of years ago and just got to be in on some leadership meetings that were really eye-opening and just really helping to develop me as a budding leader.
You know, with the pandemic, we've had to put a hold on a lot of stuff, but it's something that we're definitely still invested in, and we hope to see it come back with renewed vigor soon. Because a lot of us went through that, and it just gave us the opportunity to get to know people and then also understand how the organization works and how our volunteer interests can also fit in with what the organization is looking for or doing at the time.
What were the motivating factors for your getting involved in leading the standards division? And can you just talk about your approach to leading that section?
It was a great learning opportunity for me, in the sense that there was a lot going on externally within, you know, the government and other societies, and how these medical professionals were addressing what we called standards, but now had sort of morphed into guidelines. And so one of the challenges that I see for interventional radiology is that we cover so many clinical disciplines and our innovations are so novel that, you know, oftentimes we're behind the eight ball a little bit in collecting the data. And as a result, I think we're always trying to say, like, oh, hey, what about us? Like, don't forget from the IO world, ablation, or don't forget Y90, or what about TACE, right? And one of the ways to actually make yourself heard is to take the evidence and write guidelines in the way that other societies have done since 2011. So there was a big shift from the government perspective about professional societies needing to write and look at evidence in a way that the public could trust. And so there was a document that came out in 2011 that set out sort of 11 general principles of how to write a clinical practice guideline. Unfortunately, it requires a lot of resources and it requires people with specific specialties, like a methodologist and the ability to analyze and look at the data. And so working towards SIR, becoming compliant with industry best practices was one of the goals that we embarked on as an entire standards division. And that was a key focus point for us. And over several years, we ended up being able to hire the people with the correct expertise and collaborate with other societies to help us put out our first National Academy of Medicine compliant clinical practice guideline, which is the IBC filter guideline. And so I think that's a really big step for us as interventional radiology, because it allows us to collaborate with other societies on equal footing, and it allows us to be able to look at our evidence and push our procedures and interventions forward in a standardized way.
And so when you're putting those together, you're working in collaboration with some other societies like vascular surgeons.
For the IBC filter guideline, we collaborated with the Society of Vascular Surgery, the American Society of Hematology, and a bunch of other societies in an official capacity so that it would be endorsed and it would be a multi-society document. The standards division is moving towards developing other clinical practice guidelines in the pipeline that will address uterine fibroid embolization as well as malignant vertebral fracture and its treatment. So I think, you know, we're well on our way to writing more of these guidelines in this methodology and format, and hopefully that will be noticed by our members and other specialties.
I think that'll be informative for a lot of people. And congratulations on your upcoming term as SIR president. That's amazing. There are so many exciting things going on within our society. So there's the new structure of the society, the Vertex Registry, diversity and inclusion initiatives that have been ongoing. What do you see as your vision for SIR?
I think it's going to be really amazing, and I've had an awesome time working with the other people who are in the officer and executive committee track. And again, it's just been such a great learning experience. You know, while the pandemic had us shut down, you know, globally or in a societal way, we've actually undergone a lot of different changes in the SIR, some of which you've mentioned, including the governance structure, as well as the launch of the Vertex Registry and all the other things that we have going on. So, you know, hopefully the new governance structure is going to open up more opportunities for volunteers to engage in a manner that they find valuable. And the Vertex Registry is a really important step for us to get real-time data to look at quality benchmarking and establish thresholds for a lot of the procedures that we do. I think in line with the theme that I've outlined in standards, my goal in the short time that I have would be to help our society move forward so that we're more on equal footing across many of the clinical disciplines in which we interact. So it would be great for us to be able to have more collaboration and cooperation with the different societies, as well as take the lead on a number of clinical areas, you know, such as the work in terms of venous thromboembolic disease and the exciting things we have ongoing in terms of hemodialysis, and also to continue to make inroads within oncology becoming a fourth pillar.
So aside from that, are there any specific areas that you plan to focus on in your term as president? Like you said, there's a limited amount of time that you'll have. Are you still going to be involved with the guidelines?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to stay involved with guidelines. I think, you know, since we're exiting a period of a lot of change and we're trying to stabilize a lot of the different things, you know, we've undergone within SIR over the last 2 years, I think it's kind of still a little bit trying to keep the ship steady.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there anything coming down the pipeline that our listeners might not have heard from SIR yet?
Well, we just finished our November executive meeting, and I think we had a really great strategy session. So I think in the next couple of months, the members should be looking to SIR and its new strategic plan that is currently under development.
Fantastic. And you mentioned some volunteer opportunities. Like, how do you think that the new structure will, how do you see those opportunities changing?
Well, I think the biggest structural change is the creation of the steering council. The prior sort of leadership structure was focused on the executive council, and it was very much sort of discipline based. So you had the economics counselor, you had the membership counselor, and you had different counselors representing various aspects of the organization. And one thing that we in the past had never been very good at doing was integrating the clinical voice that had always been represented by the so-called service lines. And so with the steering council, what we now have are clinical specialty councils representing the specific clinical disciplines, and the chairs of the clinical specialty councils, and there are eight, all sit on the steering council with the division counselors. So sort of to take it back to another sort of oncology analogy is, or a research analogy is that, you know, in big sort of infrastructures, you have the core lab, right? So you have the people who are responsible for, you know, running the cells or looking at the pathology. And that's kind of how I view our counselors who are responsible for overall education strategy or overall economic strategy or guidelines for that matter. And then you have the clinical specialty councils where people who want to advance musculoskeletal and pain management may need different types of support than people who are looking to advance interventional oncology or pediatrics. And in the past, the leadership structure never allowed these two groups of leaders to interact and meet consistently. Mm. And what the steering council now does is that those leaders meet every other month, you know, via Zoom and in person in the times in which we have the in-person meetings. And they're all kind of sitting in a room and everybody's like, well, here's what we need for the GU clinical specialty. And this is what we want to advance. And then if they need economics help or if they need guidelines help or if they need something like that, then those projects are kind of plugged in. The other thing is, you know, SIR covers so many different clinical specialties that sometimes it's really hard to prioritize where the resources go. And as a volunteer, you know, it can sometimes be frustrating where you have like a great idea, but then it's like, oh, well, how do you get this done kind of thing? So the steering council allows for the ideas to be heard and prioritized and the appropriate allocation of resources. And that's the goal, I think. You know, since we started this 18 months ago, I think we're still launching it and we have to find the appropriate legs. But overall, I think the feedback has been really positive. And I think we're going to see perhaps faster execution of projects and involvement of more people as the ideas sort of germinate in this area.
It sounds like a great way for more ideas to be cross-pollinated. And I think that suits our specialty so well. As we wrap up, this is the final question that is always asked at the end of Kink Wire. So if you were not an IR, what would you be doing and why?
If I were not an IR, I would pretty much just love to travel the world. That would be like my dream, to just, you know, live in different places and be exposed to different cultures and meet different people and be able to have more of an immersive experience than just going on vacation. But the reality probably is that if I wasn't an IR, I would be driving to more teenage club sports matches as a mom.
Got it. Yep. That's a second job from what I hear.
Right. So there's the dream and then there's real life.
Well, it sounds like in your experience within the SIR, it's sort of like you are traveling the world with all the different cultures within our specialty. So hats off to you. And thanks again for your time today. This has been fantastic. And I hope it'll be really informative for people.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed the discussion.
That was Dr. Alda Tan speaking with host Dr. Barbara Nicol Hamilton about SIR's recent and upcoming plans for growth. We thank Drs. Tam and Hamilton for their time, and you for listening to The Kinked Wire. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas for us, drop us a line at kinkedwire@sirweb.org.